The time being 7:02, I'll call the meeting to order. Would you please stand as you are able and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands.
I tried to vote for you, Madam Chair. Madam Clerk, could you call the roll, please?
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Mr. Treese?
Present.
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas?
Yeah.
Mr. Pitzer?
Here.
The minutes of the December 16th meeting have been distributed. Has anyone had a chance to review them? Are there any corrections, additions, deletions, subtractions, changes? Is there a motion to approve the December 16th minutes as distributed?
Move the minutes.
Seconded by?
Second.
Mr. Trapp. Motion made and seconded. All those in favor of approving the December 16th minutes indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone of the contrary opinion, no? The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Are there any adjustments to tonight's agenda, including the consent agenda? Mr. Pitzer.
I would like to move B-387-19 to old business.
Without objection, please. Bill 387-19 will be moved to old business. Any other adjustments to tonight's agenda? Seeing none, I would make a motion that we approve the agenda as amended. Is there a second?
Second.
By Mr. Scala. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We have several opportunities to address City Council. Those that contact the clerk's office prior to the agenda going out can speak for 5 minutes at the beginning of the meeting. Of course, we often have public hearings and then additional public comments at the end of the meeting. Our first such scheduled public speaker is Martha Brownlee. Welcome back.
Okay, let me see if I can use this thing. Martha Brownlee, 701 South Greenwood. I'm here as a member of Missouri Faith Voices, serving on the Como Transit Justice Coalition. I want to begin the new year by thanking you all for your service. In true humility, I couldn't do the job of anyone up here on this dais. You are all imploded with information on a daily basis and pulled in multiple directions by different aspects of your constituencies. For most of us non-bus riding members of the public, it is difficult to imagine what it would be like to be in a situation where driving or expensive alternatives like Uber are not a choice. I therefore want to briefly recap the things that have brought me to you tonight. In August of 2018, when budget cuts to public transit came before the council, we all heard from members of the non-driving disability community. We all heard from an elderly blind woman who moved to an affordable home in Northeast Columbia specifically because it was on a bus line that gave her access to groceries and other necessities for caring for her spinal cord injured husband. We also heard from a young blind woman forced to move from her apartment near downtown Columbia because of the ever-increasing rents apartments in this area bring. When she signed the lease for her more affordable apartment, it was on a city bus line. In August of 18, the bus line was on the chopping block. Indeed, we heard the voices of many of the non-driving disability community, including people with cerebral palsy, head injury, and epilepsy. All of them told us about the centrality of riding the bus for access to activities that most of us take for granted. All of them begged the city not to cut public transit. As you recall, council voted to make the cut to the bus lines, but agreed to allow paratransit routes to remain intact and compromised on the proposed price increase. In August of 2019, many of the people from the non-driving disability community returned to the City Council with a petition with over 100 signatures supporting a proposal to reallocate funding for city buses with a nominal $3 parking fee at the airport. Reverend Sarah Clausen spoke eloquently about the special place the poor hold in our faith traditions. A number of able-bodied members of the driving public also gave public comments supporting this proposal. Presciently, Mayor Treese asked each of us before we spoke, when was the last time you used a city bus? I want you to know I have my packet of bus passes in my coat and intend to be exploring that. So the answer was never for all of us. Then a woman from the disability community spoke saying, quote, no one would ride the bus unless they had to. She poignantly went on to describe waiting in the hot July sun as her groceries melted and discuss problems with crowding of wheelchairs and walkers on the short bus used on her route. The head of the Chamber of Commerce spoke out strongly against the proposal. The council voted against the proposal, expressing reluctance to allocate money without a clear and specific plan to revamp the entire public transit system. Council discussed and recommended creating an ad hoc public transit commission modeled after the successful Columbia Climate Change Commission, whose recommendations were approved and signed into policy in June of 2019. There has been no further word on that committee. Reacting to that vote, a woman from the disability community said, "I guess the city doesn't care about people like me." That feeling, expressed by many in marginalized communities, haunts me and moves me to action and has begun my journey into the complicated world of Columbia Public Transit. This is where social justice intersects with climate change, and it involves the future of all of us. In November of 19, I attended the CATSO meeting for the public input on Columbia's long-range transportation plan 2050. The evening meeting was well organized by Mr. Teddy, who made the 40 or so of members of the public feel welcomed and actively sought our written input. I was, however, extremely disheartened by the following. Number one, the lion's share of the billion-plus dollars in federal funds for transportation in the initial 2050 long-range transportation plan was allocated for road expansion. Number two, after the period for public comment, a revised 2050 long-range plan included some decrease in roadway expansion and some increase in walking and biking spending, but there was no change reflecting the requests of myself and others to invest and incentivize the use of public transportation. Finally, the revised 2050 long-range transportation plan, which was passed by CATSO on 12/5/19, is also completely inconsistent with the climate action and adaptation plan passed by Mayor Treese and this city council on 6/17/19, which specifically calls for reducing car travel by, and I'm quoting from page 55 in the sector-specific strategies section, building a thriving public transit system. Likewise, on page 54, there's a table showing that the baseline of single occupancy vehicle trips is 78%, with the goal to lower it to 40% by 2033 and to 10% by 2050. In the same table, the public transit baseline is shown as 1%, with the goal to increase it to 17% by 2033 and 40% by 2050. In this season of New Year's resolution, I deeply hope that Mayor Treese, you and the City Council will choose to, one, review and revise the CATSO process to make it transparent and inclusive from the outset, and two, review and revise the 2050 long-range transportation plan to invest in and incentivize public transportation, making it consistent with the adopted climate change plan recommendations. May we increase equity for everyone through transportation access. Thank you.
Ms. Brown.
Thank you, Martha.
Our next scheduled speaker is Jim Windsor. Mr. Windsor.
Good evening. Jim Windsor, 200 Manor Drive. Recently, five members of the City Council signed a letter that stated in part, "We expect open, honest, and transparent government." As a citizen, I commend that concept. However, as a ratepayer of the electric utility, I question its validity. Over 10 years ago, the first interested parties meeting regarding a new substation and the first council meeting on a proposed transmission line were held. That was followed by multiple interested party meetings, council work sessions, reviews of multiple option A routes, the development of option B routes, more input from residents, more council work sessions and discussions, a community review and selection process, and of course, money being spent on consultants. This lengthy process resulted in the purchase of property for the substation and the selection of a route called option A to connect the new substation with Perchy Creek Substation. It also resulted in a bond proposal that was presented to voters in April of 2015. Approximately half of the total bond proposal, as outlined in the information presented to voters, was related to the transmission and substation projects. The April 2015 bond proposal was approved by 68% of voters. Bonds were initially sold worth about half of the total bond authority, and ratepayers received a 3% rate increase to pay for the principal and interest on the bonds. City staff moved forward with purchase of the required substation transformers and other equipment needed to build the new substation and connect to the Grindstone and Perchy Creek substations. City staff also brought forward an authorization to proceed with the transmission line. It was at that point that a group unhappy with the results of the lengthy public process came to the council in opposition to the transmission project. In January of 2016, 4 years ago, the council placed the transmission line on hold. What has happened in those 4 years? I can't cover all of the items, but in brief, the mayor suggested a different route called Option E. Burns McDonald was paid $100,000 for an in-depth study of Option E, and that study was completed in July 2018. Public presentation to council was part of the contract scope of work, but never occurred. The study shows Option E would cost a minimum of $10 million more than Option A and included a list of multiple issues that could drive the cost much higher. Quanta was hired for an electric distribution study and was also paid $100,000. That study was completed in July 2018 and included a public presentation as part of the contract. That presentation never occurred. The study shows that five substations exceed 100% of their capacity should they lose one of their transformers. Perchy Creek substation is the most in danger at 160% and that occurs at 97 degrees. Staff sent council a synopsis of the Quanta report after I raised the issue earlier this year. When a member of council asked when the last time a substation transformer had failed, staff indicated it doesn't happen often and it had been several years. That's true. The last time it occurred was in 2012 when the summer temperature was over 100 degrees. Summers have only reached 97 since then. The fact that the two reports were not publicly discussed can be blamed on the previous city manager. In the spirit of open, honest, and transparent government, I asked the city council and new city manager to require those consultants to complete their contracts and publicly explain their results. Other things that have happened, in early 2019, the council approved the West Perry Village development, which could add over 2 megawatts of load to the already overloaded Perchy Creek substation. In June 2019, the council accepted the Climate Action Plan. That plan predicts higher summer temperatures while also encouraging switching motor vehicle fuels and natural gas equipment to electricity. It also states that more frequent extreme weather events increase the risk of longer sustained power outages for the city's electric customers. So after 4 years, where are we? We have yet another citizens committee and yet another consultant with a report due in September 2020. Let's hope this summer doesn't exceed 97 degrees. Reports based on summer temperatures at 97 degrees really don't address the issue. The real issue, what will happen to the electric distribution system when the summer temperature reaches 105 degrees? That was the temperature in 2011 when the last system peak occurred. Since policy will be developed that is based on the climate report, then perhaps the question should be, What will happen to the electric distribution system when the summer temperature exceeds the previous Columbia record temperature of 113 degrees? I look forward to open, honest, and transparent government addressing these questions. Thank you for your time.
And finally, Ms. Julie Ryan of the Como Safe Water Coalition.
Good evening, Julie Ryan, 5301 Regal Way, on behalf of Como Safe Water Coalition. I want you to think about your home for a moment. Let's say you know you potentially might need an addition to your home at some point in the future, an expansion, as it might be. You start talking about it, maybe even getting some estimates for the plans you might have, but in the meantime, your roof starts to weaken. You decide to wait. You've got plans for this addition, so we're going to wait. But now you have missing shingles. You have other weak points. You think about that addition being something you'll need, but now you realize that space might not be necessary. The roof, though, now has become in an emergency state. Wind is taking more and more shingles away. The water is leaking through. Water's begun to affect the walls, floors, and other systems in the home. The years of delayed maintenance have taken their toll. While waiting to repair the roof for anticipated addition, the roof now costs more to repair than it would have been when it had been if it had been fixed when the need was identified. Now, the decisions I might make for my home affect only those in my household, but the decisions to defer needed maintenance and repairs to the water treatment plant here in Columbia affect tens of thousands of hardworking ratepayers. I hope this analogy gives some clarity to the current state that Columbia Water Treatment Plant is in. By allowing the concept of expansion to continue guiding decisions, the drinking water of Columbia has been put at risk. Former City Manager Bill Watkins told Council in April 2009, as the city was adding chloramine disinfection due to trihalomethane violations, that ammonia was a short-term solution, and the city would continue seeking long-term answers to the trihalomethane problem. Additionally, a water and light spokesperson was quoted as saying, chlorine reacts with organic material in the water, so another way to deal with it is to filter out that material. Right now, we use a sand filtering method, but we could go to a membrane filter that filters out more organic material. 2009. In 2015, a water and light staffer had the following to say. A new bond issue could be proposed for the 2017 fiscal year, and that's reflected in the draft capital improvement plan for 2016. But Water and Light won't make firm plans until a long-term study is funded and approved by Columbia City Council. The study would look at ways Columbia could reduce its water use over the next several decades. If the city can cut demand, a planned expansion of the water treatment plant might not be necessary. Again, relying on expansion. The city began exploring the possibility of an expansion in 2012, and the capital improvement plan then identified a total of $116.9 million worth of water utility projects over the next 10 years, including $32 million 3 to 5 years out for the first phase of a treatment plant expansion. Remember, in the bond issue, only $23 million was allocated to the first phase of the treatment plant expansion. Many of you know that Como Save Water Coalition has been monitoring the situation since September 2016, and we reviewed a number of our comments while preparing for this one. We realized we keep saying the same things. So here's what we've said in case anyone's listening. 5 years ago, 43% of the plant's assets were 0 to 10 years past their useful life. Based on the repair process Water and Light is currently pursuing, this goes against recommendations that, given the age and condition of the existing plant, relying on major unit processes of the existing plant result in additional risk to the city and your customers. We've also never been given a response as to why WIFIA, the Water Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act, is not being used in conjunction with bonds here in the city to finance the needs of our community. So here's a few items we found when trying to find any information we haven't already said that might incite a sense of urgency. The raw water line that enters the basement beneath the aerators presents a potential single point of failure that would completely shut down the plant. Therefore, if a break did occur in this pipe, it would take a significant amount of time to excavate and replace, potentially several days. A break during peak demands could potentially cause significant supply concerns within the system. In addition, there is no redundancy built into the raw water flow meter. This flow meter is critical to plant operation as it is used to determine chemical application rates and to record raw water flow. Any repair work required to remove the internal components of the flow meter would require the entire plant to be shut down. Condition assessment, Black and Veatch, 5 years ago. The plant underwent an expansion in 2006 to bring the capacity to 32 million gallons a day. By 2015, it was already derated to 24 MGD. Who oversaw that? 9 years? There have been comments made about the drinking water working group requesting to restore the plant's capacity prior to expansion, but please let me remind everyone that restoring the plant's capacity can be done by building a new treatment train. There are additional recommendations that were given, and those are never as part of those. We find it disturbing. The plant capacity continues to be the only part of the narrative anyone considers to reference or promote. And this was 2 years ago. How can it be permitted for millions of dollars of ratepayer-funded studies to be accumulated with no actions, no results, no clear vision? As a point of reference, the city of Hannibal put the use of chloramines to a citizen vote instead of relying on city leaders. That occurred in April 2017, requiring a completed facility by March 2020. They had a water bond vote in August 2018, just like we did. They went out for bids in January 2019, and we haven't yet. Clearly, we should have pursued a different route. As the plant fails, and it will not be because of the staff at the plant who are asked to MacGyver their way through to keep it running. It will be because city leaders and Water and Light staff refuse to take the recommendations and warnings seriously and believe that expansion down the road dictated a maintenance schedule. The roof is leaking, my fellow citizens, and when it collapses, no one can say there wasn't enough warning. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. Moving on to public hearings. Madam Clerk, could you read public hearing 120 as long with Bill 385-19?
Public hearing 120 is a proposed construction of a large shelter and connecting ADA accessible walkways adjacent to the finish line of the cross-country course within Gans Creek Recreational Area. Council Bill 385-19 is an ordinance determining it is in the public interest to construct a large shelter and connecting ADA accessible walkways adjacent to the finish line of the cross-country course within Gans Creek Recreation Area, approving and adopting plans and specifications, determining that a portion of the work shall be done by contract, calling for bids for a portion of the work through the purchasing division, authorizing a portion of the project may be done by city employees, providing for payment for the improvement, amending the FY 2020 annual budget by appropriating funds, authorizing the city manager to obtain, execute, and record all documents necessary for the improvement, providing for compliance with the prevailing wage law and state mandated construction safety training, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
And Director Griggs, do we have a staff report?
Yes, sir, Mayor. This is located Gans Creek Recreation Area, located south of town on Ward 6. Together with A. Perry Phillips Park, it represents a 460-acre regional park. As you know, the cross-country course, the master plan, we held a public hearing, and council approved it on August 20th of 2018. We were partnering with the university to bid and construct the Runners Pavilion and Timing Tower. Unfortunately, the bids came in over budget, so we decided to construct the timing tower ourselves, and we agreed to go ahead and construct the pavilion at a later date. We needed to have the finish line, the course, and of course this timing tower constructed in time for our races. Those were the things we had to have to host events. And since we were committed to hosting MU's college schedule, as well as the Missouri State High School Activities Association, that's why we ended up taking on the construction of the timing tower. We were able to operate the races with just using large tents. So instead of having the runner's pavilion, which would be where this big tent's located right here, we were able to use that. So that worked well for our first race for these two races. So what we're proposing is to do our typical large park shelter, which is 42 by 78. It'll be the spot where the athletes cross the finish line. They can come in, and a lot of them collapse, and they need some medical attention, and it's a spot to keep them away from the public while they recover after the race. We put up temporary sides on the – we'll do it like on our tent. We had sides on the tent. In this case, we'll have like sponsorship banners around the sides of the shelter, so it'll be constructed with those kind of grommets that we can add those depending on who's hosting the race. When it's not used for races, it'll be a typical reservable shelter throughout the rest of the year for park users, so they can begin to rent it and use it at $70 per day, just like any of our other shelters, like at Stevens Lake Park, Cosmo Park, et cetera. Our goal is to start construction as weather allows after council approval, but we do need to have it done by August 1st, so it works perfectly in our schedule that we can work on it throughout the winter time. It does have a gravel pad already, so we got some good area to work off of. The council appropriation will appropriate $113,726 from the University of Missouri. This is from a donation they received from MU Healthcare as part of their sponsorship of the course. $32,000 of that will be to reimburse us for the timing tower, and then $81,220 of that is for the new shelter. So we're requesting that you approve the ordinance authorizing the construction and appropriate the funds, and I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Director Griggs? Is there anyone from the public that would like to be heard on public hearing 12020 about the construction of a large shelter for the Gans Creek Recreational Area? Seeing none. I will tell you, I had my doubts. I was out there for the ribbon cutting in the first two tournaments, and there's 1,000 spectators there, and the comments that I received back from coaches across the state was that this was a premier course. The elevations, the things you did with the earth and the bank work to allow them to view the finish line at all angles, I think was very impressive. I think it's going to be a great amenity. Any other questions, Mr. Trapp?
I would just say it's impressive that And I've seen this time and time and again, that our staff can outcompete what we put out for proposals by the private sector. There's a common saw that government isn't as efficient, but we're able to bring, you know, do that project and bring it in on time and under budget. And I love that MU is paying for something that, you know, is both for their use, but then we'll have this shelter available for the rest of the community. I think it's a great partnership. Well done.
I would make a motion that we approve Bill 385-19 for the construction, authorized construction of improvements of the Gans Cross Country Course located at the Gans Creek Recreational Area, and appropriate funds for the project.
Okay. Second that.
Madam Clerk, do you want to call the roll?
Council Bill 385-19, Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
And moving on to old business, Madam Clerk, Bill 390-19.
Council Bill 390-19 is an ordinance authorizing a memorandum of understanding with Boone County, Missouri, relating to the transfer of ownership of the county fairgrounds property located east of Highway 63 and Oakland Gravel Road, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
And do we have a staff report?
Yes. This would actually authorize a memorandum of understanding with the county. I think I'm a little disappointed that Mr. Glasscock could not be here with you this evening, because I know this is a project that he is extremely excited about, because it is evidence of a renewed sense of collaboration between the city and the county on projects, and hopefully something that we will be able to continue moving forward. With regard to this particular MOU, it would transfer 135 acres of the fairgrounds property from the county to the city. The use of the property by the city would be restricted to public recreation purposes. That would also include offices for recreation, parks and recreation staff, and our tourism, convention and visitors bureau, tourism staff as well as needed on the site, so that we could run some significant events going forward. There would be 23 acres of the site reserved for use of the Boone County Fairgrounds for a period of 10 days a year. The site is also subject to a lease right now to Veterans United and United Parcel Service. Those leases run through December of 2022, with an option for an additional 2 years should the city decide to extend those following the transfer. The county does retain ownership of tract number 2. Tract number 2 is approximately 53 acres, which is adjacent to the highway. It's probably more suited for some sort of commercial development. The county is agreeing that if it does develop in the future, that it would be subject to city development codes, and that they are willing to annex it into the city limits so that we can have a coordinated development of the site. The only other item that I would point out to you that's in the lease is that the city does agree to assume maintenance of a portion of the MKT as a part of the agreement. There's a small portion of the MKT that is currently maintained by the county, and Mr. Glasscock felt like the city was really much more suited to be able to have continuous maintenance of that, and also it would allow us to relocate that back onto a city property as well. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions for the councilor?
No, this sounds pretty much like what we've already discussed. So.
Right. As advertised. Is there anyone from the public that would like to be heard on Bill 390-19, authorizing a memorandum of understanding to transfer the ownership of the county fairgrounds?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline. I just wanted to make comment that me and my little sister approached the Boone County commissioners, had a meeting with them. Maybe it's been 2 years now. You truly are taking on the task. You truly need to pay attention to the dollar. Find out what these two companies are generating to the benefit of the city. And know, I still have faith that this thing's going to make buku bucks. But the plus and minuses of the dollars are very, very important, and they need to stay on top of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oak. Any further public comment? Any further council discussion? Yep, Mr. Scala.
Just a comment. What I like about this, and I didn't mention it in the last discussion that we just had about the other facility that we have. This is kind of the northern counterpart of the southern part of our sports concept. And we talked about and discussed, if you will, some options a while back about whether or not to move some of these facilities north or south, depending on the outcome of some of these negotiations, which were kind of non-existent at the time. So with this, in addition to the Atkins ball fields and some of the soccer fields across 63, and of course I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that this is adjacent in the third ward on the third on that side of town. I see this as a complement to the balance that's necessary to provide some of these sports facilities and the capacity of our community to attract a major league, if you will, kinds of sports events. So I think this is, and not to mention, but I will, the cooperation between the county and the city, which is in sore need of repair, if you will. So I'm glad all of those things are coming together here. I think this is this is one of those rare events that is a win-win situation, maybe a triple win, that for the city, the county, and of course the department. And support. So much appreciate your work, and I'm happy to support this.
I think this really has the potential to be one of our regional parks, like Cosmo and A. Perry Phillips. And 20 years from now, we're going to look back and see this was a great opportunity. And the next 3 years, I think, gives Director Griggs the momentum he needs to really develop a robust plan and public confidence for a good development here. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll on Bill 390?
Council Bill 390-19, Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
And from the consent agenda on old business, Bill 387-19.
Council Bill 387-19 is an ordinance authorizing an agreement for the purchase of services with Boone County, Missouri for development of the Boone County Food Policy Council for the creation of a food policy plan and educational resources, amending the FY 2020 annual budget by appropriating funds and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
Sure. Good evening. So this is 1 year funding from the Boone County Commission through the County Health Funding Program, which is made possible with Boone Hospital Center lease. It's part of what they call the Strategic Innovation Opportunities Fund. So what this is Boone County Food Policy Council is a product of our Community Health Improvement Plan called Live Well Boone County. And the council was formed to address one of four strategic priority areas. Specifically, this one relates to basic needs, with the goal, one of the many goals within that category, equitable access to healthy foods. We are the last city of sort of our size in the area, one of the last to have even established a food policy council. These are very common. St. Louis, Kansas City, Springfield, Joplin all have had them for many years with great success. So what we have asked for funding for is 1 year to hire temporary staff to coordinate the food policy council's like strategic plan or their plan development. They're gonna be doing education, they'll be working with food industry stakeholders, and basically coming back with a plan that we can look to for the next several years that can be shared with the commission, it can be shared with the municipalities in Boone County, with maybe some policy recommendations. I know there was a concern with wondering if this was going to be something that was going to require some long-term funding, but it is truly a one-year project, and the plan will be developed. So I don't see any additional requests for city funding after that. If there was a need for funding, we would probably look to organizations like Missouri Foundation for Health, or depending on what's happening with the Boone Hospital Center lease. There are other potential sources of funds. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director. Any questions? Mr. Pitzer.
So if you could just give me a little bit background, the council, the Food Policy Council, is that a county entity?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And But you are, your department is facilitating it.
Right, because we are a city-county department, yes.
Right, okay. But this will be a, this plan, the strategic plan that's developed, will be a document for a county entity.
Yes. And we will be doing a lot of education with municipalities, because I think the thing that happens in most communities is when they start to look at food systems, they start to identify that sometimes there are policy changes that a municipality or a county can make to increase access to healthy food. So it's not necessarily a monetary thing, but sometimes they're just simple removing barriers to people having access.
And what the strategic plan identifies likely would be implemented through your department?
It could be. It could be also, I mean, you look at, in other communities, they look at like school systems. So they might be working with Columbia Public School, and they might be looking at local producers of, you know, like from our farmers markets, getting more food like that into the schools. I mean, food policy goes way beyond us. I mean, it can go into transportation systems, all kinds of things.
Okay. But that plan won't be coming back to us as a council. It's going to the county commission.
Yes.
Okay. And I just wanted to comment on the funding for this project specifically came from the $500,000 that the county received from Boone County Hospital to address community health needs, correct?
Correct.
Right. So my understanding is that funding will not be available after the lease expires.
That's unknown yet.
Right.
It's not okay. For sure.
Okay. Well, I was just concerned about creating an additional
right.
City entity that will require ongoing right. funding when we talk about all these other funding needs.
Well, and like I said, this is a temporary employee, so there's not a long-term, like temporary employees come in and work for a set period of time, no more than like 1,500 hours in a year. So once, and with all of our grants, we always say that there's a possibility when a grant ends, it's done. And in this case, this is just a pilot project for 1 year.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Scala.
Yeah, a few years ago, you may remember, you may have participated in this, but there was it wasn't exactly an ad hoc effort, but there was an effort for some in the private sector, and there were some invited guests and whatever to talk about these kinds of issues. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like this is a more formal way of establishing a strategic
right.
plan to really put some teeth into getting somewhere with this.
There was
right?
a really big convening at that point. We brought in all kinds of stakeholders from the food industry. And there was a lot of interest in working together.
I remember Mr. Thomas was involved in that mm-hmm. too, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been more than 10 years, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It was when we were funded by Robert Woods Johnson or Missouri Foundation for Health.
Right. Yeah.
But it was the kernel that kind of started the business about local community, well, helped with local community gardens and all that food desert discussion and so on. I'm kind of looking forward to particularly the way it's structured and that it's a regional kind of emphasis. And our collaboration between the city and the county is another example of strengthening that bond. So I appreciate that.
I have a question.
Mr. Ruffin.
What's the process for selecting the person who will coordinate this initiative?
Well, I tell you right now, that Food Policy Council has been working, and I think the Center for Urban Agriculture had somebody that had been helping them out, and their time is ending. And so I think it's probably likely to be the person that has been already starting some of that work. So it's not like we open it up to a big public process, because a temporary employee, you can hire off of it. If you know somebody and they apply, you can hire right off a roster. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Will the project be done with additional staff support or committee support, or will this individual have sole responsibility for developing the policy?
They will really be working. They will be working with our health promotion supervisor, who is also a member of that community health improvement team and on the Food Policy Council. So they will be monitored in that way, but they're really, you know, all of the people that make up this Food Policy Council are people that have full-time jobs already and are trying to do something in addition to. And so this is really going to be the person that helps move it along and so it doesn't dawdle.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Peters.
So you list this as a grant-funded program, but then in a one-year program, but we're being asked to appropriate $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's not part of the grant, correct?
Right.
And where is that money coming from?
That's the money. We're appropriating the money we're receiving from Boone County.
Okay, so we're...
So they are giving us $30,000 that we didn't budget in our budget.
Okay. So we're taking their money and then using it for this temporary employee. Thank you. I just, you know, I'm just like, it's granted money, but wait a minute, there's money involved. So, okay.
Is there anyone from the public that would like to be heard on Bill 38719? Seeing none. Any further council discussion? Mr. Trapp?
This looks like a great initiative. You know, the in food system seems something that would best be done regionally, and it's something that's attracted to me to this area is how well developed our food systems are, but we still have gaps. I think a strategic plan really makes sense. We can look at how, like a food aggregator, I think is probably our, you know, with the commercial kitchen that the Loop CID did with Mizzou North. I think that filled a missing piece. CCUA is certainly growing in capacity and doing a lot more. The food bank, you know, they're, I think, up to 40% of the food that they're distributing is by their preferred healthy food. You know, so we're really seeing a lot of development, but I think like a food aggregator where we have lots of small producers, but the, you know, the public CPS doesn't want to make 10 contracts with Apple providers. They want to buy Apple slices. And so I think that will be an important part of the strategic plan. I'm looking forward to seeing us moving forward and strategically filling our kind of gaps that we still have.
Mr. Thomas.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm thrilled to see this coming to fruition, make really great progress in our efforts to increase access to healthy food and health equity by taking this countywide view of policy opportunities.
Do you see any discussion or movement on an effort to help connect entities and specifically institutions that may have leftover food and connect it with persons who need leftover food, like homeless shelters, St. Francis House, et cetera. And there's an app called Copia, as in cornucopia, that connects those two institutions, and it's more complicated than you think, because hot food has to stay hot, cold food has to stay cold. There's health inspections, things like that. It seems like this might be an appropriate organization to at least look at, you know, home football games with large amounts of leftover food or institutions. We have
potlucks.
We have, you know, this building has leftover food at times that sits in the break room. I mean, it's just some, but you need drivers that connect those and people with coolers and Tupperwares and things that do that. And I didn't know if that's on anyone's radar screen.
It is something that they could consider as a policy recommendation, and I would be happy to ask them to investigate.
I think it'd be interesting. I think at least as a pilot project, we may have the density here between social service organizations and institutions with leftover food that, you know, it has to be timely and usable and health sensitive.
Right.
And
you don't want to put somebody at risk because you've handled food improperly.
Yeah, just because they're trying to do good. But ironically, there is a federal law called the Emerson Law by Congressman Bill Emerson that was passed in the 70s that grants immunity to anyone that donates food. There's reasons to do it.
You know, that's a great idea, but it reminds me of some of the difficulties that when Ritz and Blues and Barbecue was downtown and it was associated with the Kansas City Barbecue Festival, there were all kinds of rules and restrictions, primarily about food inspection and liability, that kind of thing, and that food was not available for positive purposes, if you will. You might run into the same kind of thing, but I think it's certainly worth looking into, and because there's an awfully lot of surplus food that goes to waste that shouldn't.
And not just special events, restaurants on a daily basis.
Grocery stores.
Dorms, et cetera. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll on Bill 38719?
Council Bill 38719, Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
And moving on to the consent agenda, Madam Clerk, could you read the consent agenda and then read it again and call the roll?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 384-19, 386-19, 388-19, 389-19, 391-19, and resolution 120. Bills 384-19, 386-19, 388-19, 389-19, 391-19, and resolution 120. Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Mr. Treese.
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin.
Yes.
Mr. Trapp.
Yes.
Mr. Scala.
Yes, on all bills and the resolution.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer.
Yes.
Seeing no further new business, Madam Clerk, could you read the bills for introduction and first reading?
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 120, 220, 320, 420, 520, 620, 720, 820, and 920, first reading.
And moving on to reports, we have correspondence from the Downtown Columbia Leadership Council about changing their membership and some of their duties. Has everyone had a chance rather to take a look at that? I haven't talked to the chairman about that, but I wouldn't mind to have a conversation with them, having previously served on the DLC. I don't see any objection to bringing back their desires in the form of an ordinance. They want to have a little bit of intersectionality with Ready, and then want to strike one of their objectives. But I think it's also timely to probably look at boards and commissions when they come back, and are they still necessary, and how are things operating?
It's kind of a general review process, yeah. More or less.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind to have an ordinance brought back that kind of provokes that, if you don't mind. Moving on to the next report, the downtown CID has submitted their slate of officers. However, I noticed that they are submitting six officers for a term of 2020 to 2024, when in reality they have one expired term that ends in 2021, and five candidates to serve in new three-year terms from 2020 to 2023. And so I neither accepted nor rejected their slate and asked them to return a better slate that also provided choices, multiple candidates for each term, so that we can look at the diversity, et cetera. They have a meeting scheduled tomorrow to resubmit an alternate slate. So no action necessary tonight.
That's a good plan.
Seeing none, are there any general comments by the public before I recognize council?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline. I'm trying to help you with your short meeting, which is very, very powerful when you sit for 2 hours and discuss one subject or two. I would like to thank the people who have stood up and talked to you this evening, because we're having a short meeting. You had the name Martha Brownlee talking on public transit and other issues that have got to be addressed. Julie Ryan with the water treatment, they say that's been going on for several years. Sometimes in this old world, we got to stop and face facts. If there's any facts to come out of that, please look into it. Thank you, Mayor Treese, on the food. This is a very important issue. I've been around many food organizations, food leftover, what are we going to do with it? Sometimes St. Francis House. A lot of the times we can't take it anywhere because of regulations, just what you're all been speaking on, if something needs to be enacted to change things. You know, I often stand up here and talk about homelessness. Tonight I'm going to give what is like the lady and the tree subject. She got very quiet one night. I would like to say four letters. Mr. Ruffin will know exactly, as long as the rest of you have a rough idea. J W A W. I messed up already.
WWJD.
I failed to write it down. I have learned this evening that all these years have gone by that I keep asking for a shelter for our homeless. and it doesn't ring with anybody. Everybody's scared of something. We can't make money. We can't make money. The reward comes in investing in people's lives. Violence, how expensive it is to have deaths right and left. Are they associated with homelessness or down in, on their luck? What is it that I am not saying correctly? But I want you to hear something that I was put to tonight, and that is we will need to have rules of you being in this shelter. And that being, I didn't ever say they, Sam stays there every year going forward. Sam enters and he has an exit time. I'm sorry. I want these people off the streets, but I did not say keeping them 365 days a year, year after year. That is not my idea of a shelter. And thank you very much.
Any further comments by the public? Seeing none. Any comments by members of the council? Mr. Scala.
Just one. Just one. And that is to hope that Mr. Glasscock is feeling better. To welcome Mr. Seawood, Deputy Manager Seawood, to the dais, if you will, I think that that goes. I think I can speak for the rest of the council with regard to both of those.
Yeah, excellent job on your first meeting. Get this out before 8. You'll have to share your secrets with Mr. Glasscock.
I don't know why Glasscock's been dragging his feet this whole time. Mr. Thomas.
I just want to let you know I'm going to be absent from the February 3rd meeting due to a work commitment. I realize that that would mean I'll miss the vote on the STRs. If that follows the timeline, I'm comfortable with that. I'll just share my recommendations with you all before the meeting if that vote's going ahead on February 3rd.
Always good to have an even number going into short-term rental.
Ruffin, we can mirror the planning.
You still need four.
3-3 is.
I just have a.
You always need four.
I just have a request that we do have a pre-council meeting on the water treatment plant, at least an hour, just to go into not exactly what was discussed tonight, but just where are we with the bond issues, the plans, what is routine maintenance, what is what we're trying to do, what's the time frame, just to try and get a whole handle on this rather than just continue to hear people's concerns about the different parts of this whole system. That's my only comment.
I agree. Yeah. Is there anything? Any objection to adjourning? Seeing
yes.
None. Yes. You can stay as long as you want. Yeah. The rest of us are going home.
I just watched Black Panther.